The Bitcoin Group, the American original. For over the last 10 seconds, the sharpest Satoshis, the best Bitcoins, the hardest cryptocurrency talk. We'd like to welcome our panelists, Dan Eve, the Crypto Raptor.
Bonjour, Bitcoiners.
Josh Igala from thestandard.io. Got to unmute yourself.
Oh, shit. So noob. Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing, folks?
It's his first day. And I'm Thomas Hunt from the World Crypto Network. Moving on to the first topic, issue one. Issue one, El Salvador's Bitcoin bond. Overpromised and underdelivered. The bond is delayed again. Dan Eve, what's happening in El Salvador? Why can't they seem to sell this Bitcoin bond, Bitcoin city, powered by volcanoes? It seems like such an easy sell.
Well, it says that they've raised $1 billion from investors, right? And half of it's dedicated to financial infrastructure and financing infrastructure projects. So like, you know, the volcano mining infrastructure, and the other half to buying Bitcoin. So it sounds like they're making progress, but also it seems like they're waiting on some law to, you know, some legal side to be passed, some bill to be passed before they can kind of take it to the next level. Now, obviously, at the moment, they've been hit very hard with the fact that Bitcoin has taken a bit of a dump. I think they're definitely in the negative right now with their Bitcoin buying, and then unfortunately. They've also got the IMF loan coming up, which is like $800 million or something. So, and the IMF keeps on knocking at their door and being like, "Are you sure you want to go down the Bitcoin route?" But it's not a failed experiment yet, right? Like, you know, Bitcoin may go even lower. I say yet. I hope it isn't a failed experiment. Ultimately, I know a lot of people are wishing for it. Why you'd wish for something to fail? You know, especially if you don't have any skin in the game, you can understand it if it's the IMF because they'll lose a lot of power. But just random people on the internet that don't own Bitcoin that are just cheering for or aren't into Bitcoin, just cheering for, you know, the project to fail. Like, why would you wish negativity on people? I just think that's really, really bad, and it says something about those people. And maybe they're just a bunch of miss the boaters, right? Oh, they missed the boat, and you know, you've just got to be negative about something. Maybe they lost it they lost their private keys in a boating accident, or maybe it's in a dump somewhere, and they can't get access to the dump to try and sift out their hard drive. So they're just going to moan about Bitcoin forever. But ultimately, this is a big test case for Bitcoin. It's the first country to accept Bitcoin as legal tender. Things started off a bit shaky with the Chivo wallet, but they seem to be progressing on, giving people more options to use different wallets, different software to actually to manage their transactions. And of course, the main thing is that it's not forced, right? Initially, it was going to be forced. Now it's a case of it's an opt-in. So, you know, you don't have to accept Bitcoin, for example, but you can do. So let's just hope that it goes well ultimately. And I want to see El Salvador do good, right? I want to see this awesome futuristic city in 5 years' time that's, you know, built with mining rewards from the Bitcoin volcano. And I hope it does okay.
Opt-in volcano bonds, Bitcoin city. Josh Igala, is the El Salvador dream over? Unmute yourself.
No way, man. The El Salvador dream of is not over yet. No, look, Bitcoin was never meant to be a state money. It was meant to be a personal money. It was meant to be a bearer-based asset that anybody in the world can use. The fact that countries have jumped on board is no surprise. Because it is the rarest number you can find and actually has value. So, you know, it is not surprising that they have, but it's not designed for states. It's designed for people. And it's one of the first currencies ever to come from the bottom up. You know, it started with the total base layer, then it built up to the next layer, Then it slowly went to institutions, and now it's at governments. And you know, governments like El Salvador, they're fairly, it's a fairly small country. It's a country that has financial problems and also criminal problems. It has, well, kind of, you know, it has a benevolent dictator as well as such. And so, you know, it's an interesting use case for Bitcoin. It's not like Bitcoin's chosen them. They chose Bitcoin. So, but I think when launching this bond, they do have to time it right. You know, you want to time it right. And this is what we're doing at the Standard as well. We have to time our launch as well right with the market. There's no point in launching anything in a bear market. You know, running Voltoro since 2015, it's one of the oldest Bitcoin exchanges at this stage, and we've seen the cycles. You know, when people say, "Oh, the price of Bitcoin doesn't matter because one Bitcoin is worth one Bitcoin," yeah, you can say that on a personal level, but actually, on a more macro level, it does matter. The exchanges volumes drop like nut, like crazy. People stop buying alpaca socks. You know, it just, the industry dries up because people just start holding their bags rather than using it as a currency. And so, yeah, I think they're just biding their time and waiting for the right time. And I would probably do the same if I was a bit benevolent dictator, not that I would ever like to be that, you know, more of on the anarchist leanings of as little government as possible, if not no government for me.
Nah, I read the articles. Bitcoin made a deal with El Salvador. Bitcoin itself signed the deal. The country agreed with the deal. Bitcoin was involved. The CEO of Bitcoin himself was down there. I think his name is like Rock Bierce or something. Anyway, exit question. Predict the future. Forced prediction. How will this end? Bitcoin bond, Volcano City, or utter disaster, dictator moves on to the Swiss Alps. Dan Eve, predict the future.
Well, even though I've been a bit negative with the Bitcoin price, I want to be hopeful for El Salvador. So I hope that the Bitcoin bond does okay, that El Salvador does good. I hope they don't default on their debt. And you know, there's a lot riding on this from an external perspective. The, you know, the world's watching the first country to implement Bitcoin as a currency. So yeah, I want it to go good.
The first one never goes right. Josh Segala, what will happen? Predict the future.
Yeah, I think it'll go all right. You know, it's just how long can you hold it? It's like miners. When they mine, they got to hold as long as they can until it's a profitable venture. So, hold on tight, Bukele. Do it as long as you can. And then you'll be seen as the genius. The problem is if it defaults beforehand and then it goes up, he'll be seen as the genius that never actually managed to do it. So, you know, just hold tight if you can. I mean, you know, screw the World Bank, screw them all, stick to your guns, diamond hands.
It's a trick question. We all know what's going to happen. Either they're going to get hacked, or we're going to find out how many Bitcoin can fit in a briefcase. Maybe both. Moving on to issue two, MicroStrategy. Michael Saylor sued for tax fraud by the Washington, D.C. Attorney General. Just a few weeks ago, Michael Saylor resigned as CEO of MicroStrategy. They said everything was fine at the time, but now we know why. Mr. Saylor is accused of living in Washington, D.C. while saying that he lived in Florida. There's up to $100 million in alleged unpaid taxes. Is this big trouble for Michael Saylor? Josh Segala.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when the state starts to, well, when they have so much inflation, what they want to do is get taxes back, because effectively what tax are a burn to the inflation that was spent during the COVID time. So We saw that the Biden administration is pumping billions into the IRS and training agents to knock down doors and arrest people and all sorts of stuff. So, and gun handling, and it's quite a big undertaking. I think it's quite amazing seeing it roll out. And I think Michael's a victim of this. If there's anything that you're doing dodgy, they'll find it. And Boris Becker, famously here, and he was a famous tennis player in the 90s or late 80s, German guy, and he also got busted because he said he was living elsewhere, and apparently it was something to do with they found his toothbrush at his house and they could test it for him, and it's like, aha, you are living here. Like just the IRS are brutal and ruthless. So I don't know, innocent until proven guilty, unless it's with the IRS and the press, then you're guilty until proven innocent, I guess.
Dan, Eve.
Yeah, it seems like that they're putting that money, was it 87,000 87,000 staff they're recruiting. So there's a lot of people, a lot of taxes to go after. And I think a good point that Josh made about, certainly, it doesn't work well for the end user of fiat, other than the government, if they're countering inflation by going after taxes. But they are going to do it, right? Ultimately, if they think they've got something on him, that he was living in DC mainly, even though he said he was living in Florida. And that the main thing is that MicroStrategy also, they're saying that MicroStrategy also helped him, to evade the taxes, which is a pretty big claim to make. So that's not good for MicroStrategy as a company. Now, obviously, he's just stepped down as CEO. I don't think that that's kind of related. I think that he genuinely is going to try and just, step aside to push for the Bitcoin strategy, especially in these dark, misty waters and this crypto winter, or Bitcoin winter. But ultimately, if you are evading taxes, or they think you are, they're going to come after you. And now they've got a lot more staff to actually do that. Watch out. The state is always watching. And they've got a long arm and lots of staff and guns and ammo.
Future prediction: Michael Saylor will pay and settle his tax problem. Exit question: Josh Sagala, does having a large tax problem make Michael Saylor more or less of a hero to Bitcoiners?
probably more of a hero. It's not really, I really don't know, because at the end of the day, he's just accused of that and hasn't gone to court yet. So I don't want to, speculate on the poor guy.
See, now I want to get on this hero bandwagon and I want to wave the libertarian he's not paying taxes flag, but then I have this fear from last week. Right. And I'm like, remember the last guy who said he didn't pay taxes for 10 years, and then he got on a boat, and then he started getting face tattoos, and pretty soon he had machine guns? Do you think Saylor's becoming another John McAfee? Is there something about Bitcoin heroes that, like, they're all going to go this way? Like, we're going to find pictures of Andreas years from now, and he's going to have a face tattoo and an angry-looking Latin girlfriend and a machine gun?
I mean, the thing is, To say that Saylor doesn't pay taxes is probably totally a misnomer, because the wealthy do pay a lot of taxes. They employ a lot of people. There's a lot of tax all the way through, from employment taxes to car taxes to fuel to petrol. Like, you do have to pay your fair share. I mean, for instance, people go on about, like, Elon Musk. Oh, and he literally has paid the biggest tax bill in the history of mankind to anybody, and paid it. So, it's a bit unfair to say that he hasn't paid taxes. I think he's probably paid taxes, just maybe not that state tax, because there's just taxes coming out from every corner at the moment.
It's a bit of a John Galt problem. If you create your own industry, if you have a large company, you make a large amount of money and you pay a large amount of taxes. But if you think about, how else could you set up the system if you need a large amount of money to help other people? So It is a complicated system. Dan, Eve, what do you think? Is Michael Saylor just one plane ride away from becoming the next John McAfee?
There's definitely something that brings the rebel out of people, right? Especially, you know, when I used to work for a finance company, and then when I heard about Bitcoin and started learning about it, mining it while I was still working for said finance company. And I found myself more and more kind of, you know, my attitude being like, yeah, screw you finance guys, not the actual people, but the system, right? It's the system. It's rebelling against the system, you know, because there's a lot of things about, especially, you know, about the way treasury systems work and that, you know, you could just make everything a lot easier in terms of international currency exchanges by just using Bitcoin and having one currency, which is Bitcoin. So I think it brings out the rebel in people. It'd be quite funny just to see him go down the face tattoo route, and, you know, maybe bring out one of those pictures with a bunch of models in their lingerie and a table full of smelling salts, as it were, as if he was powdering his nose with some jalapeno, as John McAfee famously did in that picture. There's a difference between in the UK it's like this, but, you know, there's a difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. So tax avoiding is using schemes to circumnavigate the sort of tax landscape, but that are technically legal, even though they're kind of not ethically so fantastic. And then there's tax avoidance, which is avoiding it. So maybe he's employed a lot of tax avoidance techniques rather than, you know, actual evasion, which is what they're going after him for.
Yeah, and don't forget, he also needs a hammock in that whole John McAfee.
Next up, I think Jack from Twitter will be joining the Rocky Horror Picture Show, being live on the road. It's never too late for these guys to go Bitcoin crazy. Moving on to issue 3, crypto firm fronted by Matt Damon, that's crypto.com, fortune favors the bold, accidentally transferred $10.5 million to an Australian woman instead of $100 refund, and they're having a hard time getting it back. Yes, the Australian woman has already bought a $1 million house, which she almost immediately transferred to her sister in Malaysia, and has not been responding to crypto.com's calls. Meanwhile, over at Coinbase, almost the same problem, as users in the country of Georgia milk a price bug for 100 times profit. Yes, the currency conversion price for the country of Georgia was set incorrectly, allowing Georgians to continuously make tons of money, rolling money through the system, milking Coinbase. Josh Shigala, you've run an exchange for a while. What do you think of crypto.com and Coinbase giving up money?
There's so many ins and outs with running an exchange and price oracles, so to speak, are very, you know, you just need one little decimal point wrong. And you know, Voltoro has been focused on mainly the trade between Bitcoin and physical gold bullion sitting in a high security vaulting facility. And so we have to calculate the bullion price, and then it's usually quoted, you know, in ounces, so we convert that to grams, and then there's currency exchange rates, and then there's the Bitcoin rate in between that's like fluctuating. What we do is crazy hard, but we haven't screwed it up yet. So it's one of those things that I guess, you know, I don't know, Coinbase just went live too quickly without enough QA on an update or something like that. And look, people are smart. As soon as they see a hole, they'll take it. I remember being at an ATM, and it spat out an extra hundy for me, and I looked at it and went, might try that again. It didn't work again, and I'm sure they debited my account afterwards. I didn't check, but it is like that. And this is the thing with Bitcoin. It's so slippery, it's so quick, and it's a bearer-based asset, like we mentioned before. So it's, once they have it, they have it. And this woman in this article went off and bought a house and changed the ownership to her sister's name and stuff. And now they're charging her for more than, you know, once the Bitcoin's gone, it's gone. And this is what makes it really, really hard to do stuff like, I don't know, even referral programs and stuff where you're like, oh, we'll give you, you know, just signing up some free Bitcoin, because then you just get fake people signing up and just soaking you, just sponging you dry so quickly that it'll make your head spin. So it's very difficult. It's not like the fiat system where you can really make that a slow and it's just too slow for people to build up those quick release faucets if you've screwed something up in your code. So I'm sorry to hear it. I'm sorry to hear that people then take advantage of it and then get screwed. And I think Coinbase is even asking for interest, which I think is a bit rough. You know, I think it's more of a strong arm to make sure that she pays it off, I hope, because it is their fault. And while she should pay it back, I don't know, asking interest for it is a bit rough.
Well, the users have been informed they might lose their Coinbase accounts. So that there is punishment. There's something gone wrong here. Dan, Eve, they were only off by a decimal point, but they were off for 7 hours. What's going on at Coinbase and crypto.com?
Well, I think so these people are pretty naive to think, in fairness, that they're just going to be able to take advantage of something without the repercussions, right? If I was sent X million dollars, I must admit, well, there's different people, but I think I'm going to spend that or send it to an address or, you know, dare I say it, you know, like buy something crazy with it, but or send it to a mixer, and be really crazy. But ultimately, I think to myself, no, that's a really dumb idea, because they're gonna get the money back. They're not just gonna go, oh, Dan just got away with $10 million. Like, oh, what a little tyke. Oh god, yeah. I hope
especially that you're KYC'd and everything with them, you know.
Yeah, like it's very naive. Once I had I received a check for £3,000 that cleared when I put an advert on Gumtree for a flat, and the person was meant to pay their rent up front, and the check cleared and everything, and then they said, I need can you send me back like the £3,000 to this other account, because I need to, you know, I've sent you the money up front, and it was meant to be for costs or something for moving over to the UK. So I looked into it, spoke to the police, and they said, no, nothing fishy about that. And then spoke to the bank, and they went, nothing fishy about that. And my dad was like, that's totally fishy. So then I've remembered the name of the check writer, you know, the company that was on it. And I phoned the company, and they were like, yeah, our checkbook was stolen. And the bank took the money immediately. There was no, I didn't spend it at the time. They took it back straight away. So they're going to do that. And they're going to pursue that cost, because they're not just going to let $10 million go. Even if it's small fish, you know, even if it's $10,000, they're still going to pursue it. There's now people with their bank accounts frozen. They can't buy groceries.
Well, but let's give this woman a chance, though. It was 7 months. Josh is thinking, like, yeah, you'd let the money sit in your account for a couple of weeks. You'd be like, oh, I made $10 million. Like, this is really neat. You'd show your friends, right? Oh, but wow. If 7 months went by and you weren't even contacted, like within the first few days, it would be like, congratulations on having $10 million. But 7 months. What do you think about that?
That is pretty hardcore, especially as the price of Bitcoin would have probably dropped quite a lot in that 7 months by the time they realized. But ultimately they're gonna claw the money back. I think it's naive to just think you can keep it and then that's it. Hey. The banks are, you know, that this is the even with a push system, right? That there's control over the banking industry, though, it is showing that it's hard for legal entities and solicitors to claw back the money, let alone being with Bitcoin and Ethereum, where it's a push-based system. So things can't be reversed, right? Unless it was a DAO that went wrong or something in Ethereum's case. But it was a long time ago. Everyone's forgotten about it by now. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I think it's a shame, because, you know, you think bank error, it's like that Monopoly card, right? Bank error in your favor, collect £200. But it's not like that. The bank will come after it and they'll put your ass in jail. And you don't get to collect £200 the next time you go around.
Well, and this is a pitch for my brand new game show. It's called Bank Error in Your Favor. and we give you $100,000 at your ATM account. And then the screen just says run. And it's like a Doctor Who episode. And we just see what happens. A camera crew's following you around. And then the bank investigators get on you. And we see how long you can last. Bank error in your favor. We could crowdfund that. We could just give someone 100K and then have the government chase them, something like that. Dow. But don't you think it'd be good? Yeah, see, it's a Dow right there. Game show Dow. But Josh Segala, which is worse? It took them 7 months to find out that they'd accidentally sent $10 million, or it took them 7 hours to realize that they had the currency set to the wrong amount and the users were fleecing them? Which is worse, one mistake or thousands of mistakes?
Well, I think if Bitcoin kept on going up and it wasn't a crypto winter, they would have maybe just let it slide, because the headache that it causes a lot of people, you have to pretty much put a team on this, this fuck up, and then try to, like, you know, have them just dealing with that. And if Bitcoin would just go up, they would just write it off as like, oh, you know, screw up, well, whatever. But it takes more energy to chase it than it does just to write it off. But during the crypto winter, they might be hurting a little bit more. So they're like, let's chase that up. Yeah.
That does seem kind of like the story that Coinbase would probably cover up as well. They have this perfect record of never being hacked and giving away $10 million to one person in one mistaken transaction is a lot like being hacked. Like, something with your systems went wrong to allow that, and then to not notice it for 7 months. The systems at crypto.com are highly suspect. Dan, Eve, which is worse, crypto.com or Coinbase?
I think the 7 month, yeah, that really makes a huge difference. The fact that someone can have it in their account for 7 months, you know, because if it's a short term thing, maybe as you said, the first week you're thinking, oh, should I spend it? And then anything after that, you're really like, you know, just imagine itching, the itch you would feel of being like, oh, I must be, come on, I can touch that money. Just give it one more day, you know. So
I want to read a book or see a film about this lady. I want to see the whole breakdown. They put it on the screen, like when she spends money, it's like Haagen-Dazs, Starbucks, luxury automobile. Like, how did she do it? When did she break down and buy her sister the $1 million house? It's a fascinating story. I can't wait to read more.
For sure.
Yeah, but I think she could have been smart about it and at least made the money work for her during that time, and not actually spent it. You know, I chucked it in some sweet, sweet Luna 20%. No, I'm kidding.
Well, that would have helped her pay off the $27,000 in interest that the company is charging her. That's the problem there. Like, just put it in some bonds. Come on, the stock market never goes down. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, I don't know if there's any yielding, like highly enough yielding mechanisms in these sort of bear markets. The stock market's down, everything's, oh, she could have bought US dollars. That's been going up.
A dangerous bet, especially with borrowed money. Moving on to the next topic. Check out worldcryptonetwork.com. We've got 3,004 videos. It would take you 3 months, 13 days, and 7 hours to watch all of our ad-free videos on worldcryptonetwork.com, which links to YouTube. It's been 8 years, 8 months, and 14 days since our first video. And check out World Crypto Network podcast on Apple, iTunes, and other places where you listen to podcasts. It's up to date. You can see last week's Bitcoin group right here on the audio podcast. Moving on to issue 4, 62% of wallets did not sell Bitcoin for a year during the bear market. Bitcoin traders have been holding for more than a year despite the uncertainties of the bear market, according to Cointelegraph. On-chain signals are still pessimistic, but 62% of Bitcoin wallets have held their currency for 1 year or longer. Dan, Eve, what does this say about the Bitcoin market? 62% holding. Also, the price has dipped 14% in August as a trader warns of a macro drop down More trouble for the holders, hodlers?
Well, it's definitely a sign that the Bitcoin community is full of hodlers. But I wonder if anyone's ever done any analysis of how long people keep shares for, right? Because that would be good to see the comparison. What's the average, like, especially something like tech stocks, for example, what's the average amount of time that someone keeps holding a tech stock? And I wonder if there's a massive difference because of the hodler mentality. But obviously, people who get into Bitcoin, there's a lot of noobs and they have to panic sell when they see the price drop. But anyone else, you know, has been in Bitcoin a long while, it's that kind of that meme where, like, they repurpose Miss Sabine on a roller coaster, just like with a straight face going up and down. Yeah, that's what you're like. You've got to be resilient to seeing the price drop like 60% in a day and then up, depending on how long you've been in for, and just seeing your entire net worth just drop by an insane percentage and then go up by an insane percentage. You know, it's an incredible roller coaster. But it's ingrained in people now, right? They know that they need to hold on, otherwise if they'll be selling at a loss. There's the kind of general rule of thumb about the halving that we talk about quite often, that if you held technically for 4 years or more, you're always going to be up. The thing that might break that actually is if we dip. In fact, we may have already broken that. But the all-time high in 2017, right, was something like 19,500. So if Bitcoin goes below that, and I think it may have even gone below that, right? Technically, that four-year rule is now a five-year rule, because the people who would have bought in 2017 would actually at the top would actually be slightly lower, although they went straight back up again. So at the end of the day, it swings and roundabouts, ups and downs, roller coasters and fairground rides. You just got to hold on tight. Ignore the Bitcoin price. Make sure that you've got to think of almost it's like your pension, right? You can't touch your pension whilst you're putting the money away until you reach that level of age in terms of your pension maturing. And so Bitcoin's like that. Just as long as put smaller amounts away. This isn't financial advice, but not enough that you could afford to lose or that you'd need to sell it early and then regret selling it early. And just ignore the price and just take interest in the technology. It's all about the technology.
Josh Shigala, is Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme with 62% of the people all holding and not selling? Are they collaborating together? Is this some kind of cabal? Could it all break up and the entire price value disappear?
No, the real Ponzi scheme is the retirement funds. They need more children born to have more workers than the people retiring. So you got to get more new people into the fraudulent system than people paying out. And that's not happening. Kids are too busy swiping. Teenagers, they're finding that birth rates are just dropping globally. We're actually heading for an absolute collapse, which is funny because everyone goes on about overpopulation. But anyway, I have given up coffee. So Propagol here in the chat is counting down for my next yawn. I don't know what to really say about it.
Well, mainly playing devil's advocate there, but it is something that I think a non-Bitcoiner would look at from the outside and say, 62% of you people are holding on to these things, even though you've lost 70% of your value, even though it's dipping again, even though Dan keeps saying 10K every week, blah, blah, blah. These people still hold on. So I wonder what's wrong with these Bitcoiners, what's different about them. And then I wonder, as we've seen so many times, that if we're just in a valley again and it goes back up, then we look back at all this and we're like, of course the holders held because they thought that Bitcoin would go up more. They knew there was a limited number of units. They believed in the technology, the same things we've been saying for, 8 or 9 years now, the same exact things at 300, at 500, at 5,000, at 50,000, not knowing again that, 50 would dip to 20 or all those things. But it does seem like things don't just go straight up in a line. They go in that wiggly line up, and then maybe we're just in another wiggly line.
I did see a report, this was quite a few years ago, about the difference between women and men when it comes to sunken cost fallacy, sort of sunken cost stuff. So men at gambling tables are more likely just to sit there and just go all the way until it's all gone, whereas women are more likely to cut their losses and run. Maybe it's the same thing with Bitcoin. There are a lot more men in Bitcoin still, and you know, I think that those tables are turning, especially through the NFT hype. But
our demographics would line up perfectly with Josh. I think we're about 99% male. Our demographics for male to female are a nightmare. But yeah,
it really is. And I don't know why, because it's open. Everyone's allowed to come. It's not there's no gatekeepers, but it is what it is. So that might be one of the reasons, is that the men are just like, no, I've lost so much already. Screw it. I'm just going to hold on until the next bull run.
And now we're going to hold on until the exit question, where you must predict against the greatest predictor of Bitcoin of all time. Dan Eve, is the price of Bitcoin higher or lower this time next week?
Oh, I'm still neggy. It's lower. I think it's lower.
Josh Higala, does the pessimism continue?
The pessimism, unfortunately, continues. I've got to say, I've drawn my triangles. I've moved my lines. I've checked the wedges. I've done the Fibonacci's, and I'm all Fibonacci'd out. I think I'm going lower.
I mean, the stock market keeps going down. The bond rate keeps going up. The war in Ukraine keeps going on. I'm sure that this is going to be fine. I continue to be bullish here. But we'll ask the ball, will the price of Bitcoin be higher this time next week? Ask again later. Ask again later. The ball doesn't even want to tell you. It won't even share its truth with you. Moving on to issue 5, Snoop Dogg and Eminem performed as their Bored Ape Yacht Club NFTs. And according to PCGamer.com, it's somehow even worse than you'd think. Yes, NFTs and Bored Apes hit the American Music Awards, or the VMA Music Awards. Here you can see Snoop Dogg and Eminem flying through a virtual universe, being transformed in and out of their NFT characters from the Bored Ape Yacht Club. Josh Shigala, what do you think about Snoop Dogg and Eminem and their performance at the VMAs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, originally when CryptoKitties came out, I thought, I've got to buy one of those, and I'm going to like pay a bunch of animators just to make an animation of this CryptoKitty and make it really famous and then sell it for a shit ton. And I think this is exactly what's happening. I'm seeing it fairly often. I saw it with Eminem's, now Eminem, the rapper as well, a whole lot of Eminem's. It's the thing that's happening. They're trying to make certain NFTs more famous, and you know, it's a definite strategy. It's taken a little while, but it's bound to happen. Absolutely bound to happen.
Dan Eve, NFTs on famous rappers on TV shows. What's next? Movies, video games, everything?
Well, I think this article's a bit skewed, because they just seem like a miserable writer that doesn't like rap or particularly Eminem and Snoop Dogg. So, you know, music is, like any art form, is very subjective. And if you don't like it, it's really easy to sit there and be a keyboard warrior and be like, it's a really poor performance, blah, 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 nah, 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 you know, and just give your give your two penneth whether anyone really cares or not. I didn't actually watch all of the performance. Obviously they you know, they had they used their NFTs, and if you don't like rap combo, you don't like rap and you don't like NFTs, then you know you're really going to moan hard about the performance. So it's just another one of those things. Like, I saw the Gorillaz live once, right, and I came away thinking it was like the best show ever. It was at Glastonbury, and it was absolutely incredible. But then I read the reviews the next day, and everyone was like, oh, it was a really poor, mediocre performance, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, it's very subjective, like like art generally is. So and if you don't like NFTs, you're just going to moan about anything NFT related. So, but NFTs, I like it or lump it, they're here to stay. They've got utility and people like doing things with stuff. You know, it's not just a case of buying the art. It's a ticket to get you into places, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah.
I, of course, thought it was great. I love all the NFT stuff. It's great to see them advertised on TV. I hope they'll learn soon about Curio Cards, the 2017 NFT that could, that just keeps going there. I think it's great. I still think we want to remind everyone that Snoop Dogg has taken his music off of Apple, iTunes, and Spotify, as he owns Death Row Records now, and that he's going to release those as NFTs. So, part of it good, part of it bad. It's great to see this promotion. They're complaining about the graphics. I mean, who cares? It was live. It was really fun. Like Josh says, it's interesting that Bored Apes has been chosen to be the winner out of all the other NFTs and all the possibilities that there could be. But like Dan said, it's not just that you kind of own your image or your randomly generated image, which is again super crazy that these major stars have chosen, you know, Cheetah Guy and the Helmet Guy to be their representatives in cyberspace, but it's also that they're members of a club, that they could be invited to the same party, that they could get benefits and features, that you're now in the same group as Eminem and Snoop Dogg.
To give you an idea, so this is a little snippet from the article, and I'll read it how it was written. My favorite part features the two men apified standing atop an obelisk while Eminem raps about how good his songs are. Throughout the whole section, Snoop is just kind of waving his hands non-committedly, wearing a thousand-yard stare like he's remembering a lost boyhood love. This is honestly the best part of the entire video. That's basically, you know, that you can tell with that obvious objectivity of watching the performance objectively, that's slightly you know, slightly their own personal preferences are really creeping in. So just why not just not write about it if you're not into NFTs or rap or Snoop Dogg or Eminem? Like, you know, it's like me writing about knitting and go, well, this was the most boring thing ever, you know, blah blah blah, you know, I just sound like an idiot, really.
And part of the fun is seeing all these hackers come out and that they're so excited to hate on NFTs. Meanwhile, Ticketmaster's adopting them, Tom Brady's printing them, Quentin Tarantino's making them. If you give people the ability to make a unique collectible, it seems as everyone wants to do that. They want to give it a try, especially if it's a unique collectible that doesn't fill up your garage with garbage. You don't have to learn any really specialized skills. And now with Midjourney and DALL-E, these AI generating things, you could just make your own NFTs out of that. So I think it's incredibly democratizing technology, but we are mainly seeing the large scale effects with major rappers like Snoop Dogg and Eminem buying $500,000 NFTs and then parading them around on the Video Music Awards. So we're not quite at full democracy yet, but we could get there.
But this sort of egalitarian thing of like ICOs, we could get rid of the VCs and everyone could have a go. But really what happened was the VCs came in and bought up everything early and then sold it and rug pulled people. And now, you know, it's the same thing. We can all just, you know, be more egalitarian with art and stuff. But then the big artists come in and sort of take the big picture. You know, people like having, you know, people to look up to and you know, pray at.
Well, it's a lot like YouTube. When YouTube started, it was supposed to be just people talking into their cameras like this and, you know, little unproduced shows and people actually responding with response videos to each other. And then very quickly it became this kind of professional thing and this ad back thing, and all the corporations are on YouTube as well, and they take away Google Hangouts. Like, they actually had a way where you could make really nice looking shows built into the software for free that they disabled and took away and made it much harder to make shows. So it is a bit like all technologies, it's sadly rolling back, but there's still some hope. Dan, Eve, tell us about the future of NFTs with the exit question. What's the future of NFTs? What do we want to see next? A movie, a video game? Snoop Dogg actually releasing this music in a playable form, maybe even that the idiotic idea that they could have a bridge between his NFTs and Apple iTunes and Spotify, where everyone listens to their music and you actually could get them back. What do you think will be next for NFTs? Something more exciting than an Eminem and Snoop Dogg performance?
Well, I think it's going to be something that's more practical. Maybe, you know, there's something that will that will really take off is if an existing game company that has all these crazy buyable items suddenly makes them NFT based, so you can redeem your giant sword in your game or whatever, and then sell it on for something else. So yeah, I think something like that would really go down quite well with the traditional great gaming community, because it means they can also, one, the person who's bought this sword and no longer plays the game can actually sell it on, for example, and it can be then transferred to another game or something, and transferred through the game series. And two, it means the publisher gets to like get resale a commission out of it. So, you know, if you can sell something once, it's all good selling a sword for $100. But then if they resell it on, and you can get 10% for that resale, then that's a huge moneymaker, especially if they provide the marketplace, you know, for it, etc. So I think something like, yeah, some sort of an in-game sort of usage is gonna spearhead NFTs to a much wider audience. Obviously, there's celebrities doing stuff daily, I think something big in gaming where there's a huge user base buying stuff, I think that's gonna go down well.
Actually, looking at the video again, Bored Apes, they used a lot of stock stuff, those electric things that come out. I've seen them on Envato Elements. So it's so funny when you're in video production stuff for a while and you can see things like that.
Josh Shigala, go ahead. Exit question. What would you like to see in the future of NFTs? Obviously, Dan Eve is excited to sell everyone 10% of his giant sword. What excites you about NFTs in the future?
Actually, my favorite thing is more on the DeFi side. I really like the idea. That's something we're looking at the Standard is when you borrow money from yourself. So you lock up some Bitcoin and Ethereum into a smart contract called a smart vault. And let's say you borrow a whole bunch of S-Euro and you bought your car and you have more value locked up, but somehow you can't pay the debt back to unlock that value. You can actually sell that as an NFT. Uniswap has done that with trading out for version 3 in Uniswap version 3, rather than LP tokens, they use NFTs, which show exactly how much liquidity you've got and how much you've got to pull out. So I think there's really good use cases for NFTs outside of art. And I've said that quite a bit on this show. I'm really excited to see what else we can do through, you know, non-fungible tokens, having a look at, also keys, you know, really, they're really great at keys, being able to unlock certain features. We're doing that at the moment. We gave away a whole bunch of NFTs for the standard.io for proof of attendance, which is also a really cool idea. It's just, if you were at the thing, then you get some proof of attendance power rings from the Standard. Check out the Standard IO Twitter account and for the next time we do those. But it's really amazing. And they were all generated with Midjourney. Like, they still took a long time, put a lot of passion in to find, you know, to figure out the right things to create. But and people have absolutely loved it. So those things will then be able to, once they've got that, we know that address is a member of our community. And we can airdrop things to them. We can allow them to unlock special parts of Discord. We can allow them to vote, or have maybe they can have more power to their votes if they've got one of these rings. So there's a lot of things you can do with NFTs. I'm really excited to see what the future brings. And, you know, this whole community, this whole industry is just growing. If anyone says that they're an expert in NFTs, they're lying, because there is no such thing. We're all developing it right now. We're inventing the space.
Well, I, for one, would like to see more respect and monetary attention to historic NFT projects. If you think about things like Spells of Genesis, Rare Pepes, Mooncats, and of course, Curio cards, there's a limited number of them. So once again, going back to my thesis of, are NFTs real? Well, if NFTs are real, then the oldest ones would be the most valuable because naturally they're antiques, especially if they're limited, especially if you can only tell there's a certain number of them. So I think that the NFT people need to go back in their history, buy up all the historic NFTs so that there are none on the market, which would drive the price way up and provide legitimately to the legitimacy to the whole activity, because they would then start judging people on what's the oldest NFT in your wallet, how many old ones do you have, and but then Thomas, going forward to make new ones and lots of new ones.
But which chain, the proof of work or the proof of stake chain? That's the question.
Well, I think it's a fun intellectual exercise, but OpenSea's been very clear they're going with the proof of stake chain. If you look at the rest of kind of official Ethereum, they're 100% on board proof of stake. This proof of work thing is going to happen, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal unless you really need that extra, I don't know, 5%, 10%, whatever you think you're going to be able to sell your not real NFTs for, or your alternate NFTs, or whatever you want to say. I can already see a semantic battle starting there with the splitters and all that and what language you use. But no, I don't think there'll be a big fight for the proof of work chain. I think the miners will mine it. It'll continue as a thing, but I don't think that the new NFTs will be issued on there, especially with what OpenSea's released with their guidance and what they're doing. But we're running out of time. Dan, Eve, do you have a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
I am going to go for something basic here. I'm going to be, and it's going to be, I predict that there'll be another exchange revelation of someone else that's gained a lot of funds from either a loophole that has been undiscovered, or, and I predict that I'm going to go for it by next week, by next Friday, we'll hear about another big one. You know, kind of like the Coinbase and crypto.com, someone's bought a trip to the moon using it, and unfortunately they're gonna come clawing the money back.
I still love this crypto.com $10 million Australian lady. I can't wait to see the movie. I'm sure they'll be able to get Matt Damon involved, and I can just see them kind of running around their, you know, perfectly normal house in Australia going, we won the lottery. We won all the money. We're rich. You know, Matt Damon has brought this to us. And I think it'll just be a hilarious story as soon as they get it settled. And once somebody purchases the rights and writes up the thing, and maybe it could be a Coen Brothers movie, like a great grand farce. Josh Chagall, a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
Yes, you could grab people and say, fortune favors the brave. You know, you could really see it. You're right. I can't. Well,
it starts out in the tavern afterwards, and like, I used to think that fortune favored the brave, and at one time I had $10 million in my account. Don't believe me?
Yeah. No, we have so much stuff going on. We signed new partnerships over at the standard.io with Basenode.io, Niftables, Roya Edition. There's just so much stuff happening. Regen Unite, which is like regenerative projects in the crypto space, which is really cool. We're going to be participating in the Burr Chain, which is like Berlin blockchain stuff. There's a great event coming up. We've launched also we started getting the audits done for the smart contracts through Hartej from Zokio. Those guys, they're one of the very first to do smart contract auditing when Ethereum first launched. They really know what they're doing, so we're happy to have them on board. Obviously Hartej, the co-founder of that, is one of our advisors on the project. And we're just moving forward. We launched on testnet, which is really, really great, on Gurley testnet so people can start testing the IBCO, which is the initial bonding curve offering. This is the way we create the first MVP of the stablecoin. It's like a communal smart vault. So people can all put their money in and get a yield out in SURO. So basically get a discount on the SURO while it's still, you know, in that time period, it won't be a stable coin yet until it reaches 1-to-1. But it's really exciting seeing it all come out. You know, when you've been working on a project for so long and the interface is starting to come together, tests are starting to happen, less and less bugs. Now we've got the auditors in. So it's really, really exciting to see that. And I can't wait to see the code audit come back and slowly start to launch. If people want to jump on the Discord, just head over to the standard.io and join the Discord and join the fun. It's really a blast.
Well, sounds great, Josh, and it's glad to hear everything's going well at the standard.io. all right, I think we're running out of time for this week. Everyone, be sure to check out the podcast. We're keeping it up to date, so just in case you want to have the audio version of this show so you can walk around and do other things, the podcast is now up to date. Be sure to give us a thumbs up down below and leave a comment. We do read your comments, and we do enjoy all the fun spam comments that we get. I think this week we had some kind of coin. They buzzed through the section, and then we deleted them all, and then they came back, and they replied to everyone twice. And it's just like, what an amazing algorithm YouTube must be running to allow people to reply twice, to allow people to post the same message over and over again, and not even to check it, like just to just let it through. It's amazing the technology they have here at YouTube. I'm totally impressed. Google, you know, don't be evil. They continue to surprise.
I also love that they let all these like obvious scam videos live. You know, with Elon giving away thousands of Bitcoin all the time.
How could they not have put a human being on that? Like, we're all like, oh, you can't do that. It doesn't scale, whatever. But you're a giant company. You put one human being on it whose job is like, I execute these terrible videos. And in a week or two, that kind of level of enforcement would cut it off, right? Everyone would be like, you don't make money that way anymore. But as you'll see probably when this video ends, it'll recommend, like Josh is saying, one of these Elon scam videos or Bill Gates Bitcoin scam or whatever it is with a big QR code, and he'll double your Bitcoin if you send it to him. So obviously never send your Bitcoin to anyone. They're not going to double it.
And they're all live as well. They always, all the scam videos, they literally make it so that it's on a live reel over and over again. And they
and it would be simple for Google to just target their live videos and fix that. Yeah. But again, don't say anything to anger the Google overlords. We're lucky that Twitter is even working on an edit button for us this week. So there is hope. There's hope. And we're running out of time. But until next week, bye-bye. Bye-bye.